Good evening. This is TNT Radio, brought to you by Blogging Service. And folks, I'm going to have to move across the room because I'm adjusting the buttons and operating the mic and just about everything else tonight. So just hold on in there while I get across the room. I see the mic is working. Hang in there, folks. I'm almost over. Okay, back to the desk. Let me give it to you again, that great intro. Good evening. This is TNT. Oh. This is TNT Radio, brought to you by Blogging Broadcasting Service. And I'm Nevin Campanella, your net reporter. Well, folks, how was your day? Did you have a great day? I hope you did. Be a great day. You know, I've been told that regardless of what happens, no matter what it is, it's up to you to decide how to feel about what occurred. I haven't been on the air?
No.
Good evening. This is TNT Radio, brought to you by Blogging Broadcasting Service, and I'm Nevin Campanella, your net reporter. And what kind of day have you had today? I had a good day. Actually, I had a great day. You can have a great day every day. It is possible. You are in the control seat. You decide how to feel, regardless of what occurs. It's up to you. All of it. You really are in control, and you are not a victim. Ever. You are never a victim. It's up to you to decide how to feel. Okay, April 7th. What's going on in history on April 7th? Well, in 1805, you know, I love this one because I read a very specific book. The Lewis and Clark Expedition. The Corps of Discovery breaks camp among the Mandan tribe and resumes its journey west along the Missouri River. Now, folks, there is a wonderful book, absolutely fascinating, called Sacagawea. I think the book was written, I'm guessing here, 15, 20 years back. Wonderful, wonderful book. If you like history, and you like reading history about primitive areas, I'm telling you, this is really great, really a good book. April 7th, 1827. You know, I always wondered where this came from. Hold on, folks.
Doug, you're too loud. Doug, you're coming on the mic.
In 1827, John Walker, an English chemist, invents the friction match. Did you ever wonder where it came from? That little pack of matches? Well, there's actually a person attached to it, John Walker. What amazes me is that we're talking about 1827 and not 1927 or something like that. 1827, that little book of matches, been around a long, long time. And here's a good one. April 7th, 1927 was the very first long-distance public television broadcast. It occurred between Washington, D.C., to New York City. And the only thing that they put on the screen when they were testing was Herbert Hoover, who at the time was the Commerce Secretary. Interesting, huh? April 7th, 1933. Prohibition was repealed for beer of no more than 3.2% alcohol by weight, or 4% by volume. And 8 months later, there was a complete ratification of the amendment, which prohibited, but you know what? I can't remember the number of the amendment. Oh, the 21st. Yeah, right? Yeah, it's got to be 21st Amendment. Well, what was prohibition about? Prohibition began on January 16, 1920, when the 18th Amendment went into effect. Federal prohibition agents were given the task of enforcing the law. Prohibition also referred to that part of the temperance movement, which wanted to make alcohol illegal. Probationists had some success even before national prohibition in 1905. Three American states had already outlawed alcohol. We did have, in fact, dry states. That's what they used to call them, folks. And even though the sale of alcohol was illegal, alcoholic drinks were still widely available at speakeasies, an underground drinking establishment. And you've seen plenty of comedies in the movies about those speakeasies and what went on in them. I don't know if they're all as appealing as they show in the movies. Now, let's talk about prohibition, not as prohibition of alcohol. I want to spend a few minutes talking about laws which attempt to regulate morality. Because that's what we're talking about, folks. Laws which regulate morality. Does it work? No, of course not. The only thing that happens when you tell someone you can't do a particular thing, as something as innocuous as drinking, they're going to do it. Some of them will do it simply because you told them they can't. Prohibition did a number of things. Well, first of all, it certainly didn't stop alcohol consumption. I mean, alcohol flowed like a river. Why? Because it became extremely profitable. That's right, it became extremely profitable for those who were willing to make, deliver, and sell the alcohol against the law, of course. Can prohibition work? Of course not. You start treating people like children, and 9-10 times out of 10, they'll just, as a child, react the way a child will. Did prohibition of alcohol actually reduce alcohol consumption? Obviously not. A lot of money was made. And in fact, the worst thing that happened in terms of what you would know as the mafia and so on and so forth, the worst thing that happened to them was repeal of prohibition. Because that meant money out of their pocket. Yeah, that's right. The black market is gone. It's all opened up. Now you can not only purchase it, but now you pay a tax on it. Everybody wins. Well, folks, I want you to think in terms of our so-called drug war, which is about as pointless as you can get. I mean, I can't think of anything sillier than what goes on with the so-called drug war, this war on drugs. First of all, drugs, the concept. In other words, you're ingesting something to alter your mental or physical state. Okay, that's about as simple a definition as I can come up with. So where does drug addiction come from? Does it come from people immediately deciding they want to be a drug addict, so they run out and go find a heroin dealer? No. Drug addiction begins in the medicine cabinet. That's right. Go into your medicine cabinet right now. And you are going to find medications in there to alter how you think, how you feel, your physical self, your mental self. That's where it starts. We want immediate gratification. And so, it's given to us legally with prescriptions. Believe me, prescription medication is a lot more abused than any other drug. You think about the amount of things like Valium that get so easily distributed. You're never going to control drug abuse by prohibiting it. No, it's not going to happen. No matter what you do, some people are going to take drugs with or without laws. It's going to happen. Well, why should we get rid of laws? I mean, why shouldn't we keep it on the books? Well, number one, it really doesn't serve any purpose. It just adds to the number of laws on the books. But number two, why are you criminalizing a behavior that's common throughout the... Yeah, that's right. I mean, this is common behavior. This is where the concept of morality steps in. Now, should some drugs be illegal and others legalized? You know, I'm not really smart enough to answer that question. But it seems pretty obvious to me that if you're going to keep alcohol legal, I have no idea why something like marijuana would be illegal. It makes absolutely no sense to me. They're both drugs. They both will alter your thinking, your reaction time. They will both alter your physical self in one way or another. What's the difference between them? Why is one legal and the other not? I have no idea. Does alcohol have a good medical effect? Absolutely. Alcohol taken in moderation, and I do mean moderation. I'm talking about, you know, 3 to 4 ounces of wine. It has been demonstrated that that, in fact, can help people with heart problems in moderation. Keep that notion in your head. Also, marijuana has a medical use. It absolutely does. And only recently have states begun to look at the medical use of marijuana. However, our stupid federal government keeps attempting to stop states from opening marijuana to where it could at least be consumed for medical purposes. How bizarre. How totally bizarre. Think about it, people. Again, you have got individuals out there moralizing on how you ought to live, how you ought to think, what religion you ought to have, how you ought to vote, what newspaper you ought to read. How did it get to this? We let it happen. They did not descend out of the sky, folks. These moralists that control us by their laws, we elected them. Now, will drug addiction and the severe problems that drug brings, would it go away if you relieved the laws prohibiting drug use? Absolutely not. Nothing would change in regards to that. Nothing. Then why legalize drugs? Because, again, why are we criminalizing common behavior? You know, what's really odd is in the Mideast, it's just the reverse. Alcohol is illegal, but hashish is quite legal. Okay, enough of my rant on prohibition and prohibition of alcohol or drugs. This day in history of April 7, 1969... Does that mean anything to you, April 7, 1969? It didn't mean to me either. It didn't mean a thing until I went into the net and looked it up. April 7th, 1969 is the, quote, symbolic birth date of the Internet. So if somebody says to you, when did the Internet start, when was it born, whatever, you now can say April 7th, 1969. Is that true? Well, again, it's a symbolic birth date, and it is based on a publication called RFC1. So, in a way, it is kind of nice to have an official starting point. I'm hesitating here, folks, because I heard a strange sound behind me, and it's rain coming down, and I haven't heard that for a couple of days. All of a sudden, the sky is opening up. Births. April 7th, 1897, Walter Winchell, American broadcaster. 1908, Percy Faith and his orchestra. He was a Canadian composer. April 7th, 1915, birth of Billie Holiday. Quite a singer, but a very, very tragic life. By the way, Billie Holiday was, in fact, a drug addict. And 1928, James Garner was born on April 7th. And he's still alive today. And as far as I know, every once in a while, he still pops up in a movie. Great actor. Off to the national media. What did I learn today by going through the news? Well, for one, the immigration bill is being stalled in Congress. You know, that famous bill that Congress came up with to try to deal with the immigration problem. Would the bill deal with it? No, of course not. But as meager as the bill is, and as pointless as it is, it got stalled. I think there's some partisan bickering going on over amendments. But I think eventually this particular bill will pass. Well, what does it do? This immigration bill that we're talking about has three levels to it. And in effect, all the bill really does is define three levels of illegal immigrants. That's right. That's all it really does. The first level that it defines, it says, if you're an illegal immigrant and you've been here for over 5 years, you can apply for residency here in the United States and you don't have to leave the country. That's the first part of the bill. The second part of the bill says, if you've been here for 2 to 5 years as an illegal immigrant, you can still apply for residency, but you have to do it at a border crossing point. I have no idea why, but maybe it has to do with who might be currently having a warrant on them. I don't know. So that's the second level. The first one is 5 years. The second one is 2 to 5 years. And the third level is if you're an illegal immigrant and you've been here for less than 2 years, you have to leave the country and go to your home country and apply for a visa to enter. Now, one other thing that this bill would do is it would appropriate money for the purchase of surveillance equipment for along the border. Now, when I'm talking about surveillance equipment, I'm not talking about a couple of cameras. I'm talking about surveillance equipment that would extend the whole length of the border. So that's going to be quite a bit of money. I don't know who's going to monitor all that. I mean, you can have all the equipment on earth, but what good is it going to do if you don't have people to use it? This one is going to get strange, I'm sure. And probably like usually what happens in Congress, a huge waste of money. What has happened in the past on the border? Money was spent on equipment. They find out the equipment is useless or pointless or a bad purchase because it was bad equipment. From the Daily Record is a newspaper in New Jersey. I'm going to read this straight to you. Quote, 4 teenagers accused of plotting to kill about 25 people in a lunch period massacre at Winslow Township High School were charged today with terrorism, a crime no one has ever been convicted of in New Jersey. The boys between the ages of 14 and 16 were arrested Wednesday after police heard about the alleged plot from administrators at the school where 3 of the teens are students. Authorities did not release their names because of their ages. Excuse me. I still have this funny voice, and I think I got a lot of allergies. That's why you're going to hear me cough. Of course, smoking don't help. Okay, let's go back over that last sentence. I want to read that to you again. Authorities did not release their names because of their ages. Do you know that in most states there is no law that says you cannot release the names of the child? That's right. There's no law that says you can't do that. A few states might have it. A few local municipalities. the reality of not releasing the names usually has very little to do with the police officer or the sheriff's department, but a lot to do with newspapers. That's right. It is more often a newspaper policy. And that's why names are not released. And should they be? Absolutely. Who is saving who by not releasing the name? Makes no sense to me. Release the names. Let's get on with this and let's stop playing games. The next major media is Inside Bay Area. That's actually a paper from around Oakland. And the title is Gore Urges, listen to this, Gore Urges Moral Crusade Against Global Warming. Well, what's wrong with that statement? I'm going to read the paragraph to you, and I'm going to go back to that statement. Quote, Al Gore brought corporate executives and environmentally minded investors roaring to their feet Thursday with multimedia images of an overheating planet and a call for Americans to reclaim their moral authority by tackling global warming. This is really not a political issue. It is disguised as a political issue, Gore said. It is a moral issue. It is an ethical issue. If we allow this to happen, we will destroy the habitability of the planet. We can't do that, and I am confident we won't do that. All right. Let's go back to the title. Gore Urges Moral Crusade Against Global Warming. Well, how do I feel about that statement? Most of it, I think, is pretty good. The use of the word moral, another pile of crap. There is, folks, not crapping in your own nest has absolutely nothing to do with morality. It's got to do with logic. What does morality have to do with this? Why is Al Gore making this a, quote, moral issue? I just covered extensively the stupidity of trying to make moral laws. And now they're going to make behaving ourselves with the planet a moral issue? Folks, let me tell you something. This has got nothing to do with morality. This has got to do with stupidity. You do not crap in your own nest. Why? Because you get sick and die. This is called stupidity. Should we have a crusade against global warming? Absolutely. We got to stop getting people to be stupid. They've got to brighten up. Well, why aren't they? It's real simple. Corporate America makes a lot of money on dumping crap in the oceans, the rivers, and in your backyard. They could care less. They're making money. It is not a moral issue. There's nothing moral about it. It's simple logic, folks. It's social suicide not to do something about global warming. You want to commit suicide? That's what we're doing. On to My Way News. Hey, you know what? My Way, that's one of the best newspaper areas on the net. Why do I say that? Because there's absolutely no advertising. I don't know how they do it. Yeah, you go on to My Way, there's no advertising at all. You go on to something like New York Times or the Washington, and let me tell you, there's advertising. It's hard to find the articles. My Way, the article is straightforward. They're right there in front of you, and they go by different newspapers and different opinion polls. It's a great little place on the net to get some news and get it quickly. Now, what's going on in My Way? What are they reporting? Well, they report national and international news, but I chose a couple more of the interesting stories to report to you. This one is in Jakarta. Absolutely fascinating. Quote, Playboy magazine may no longer rate on the sexual cutting edge in some places. But the first edition in Indonesia the world's most populous Muslim nation, caused a stir Friday. That's right, folks. Playboy magazine was released, but you got to understand when they released it, it is not quite the same publication we get here in the United States. It's very watered down. Although the pictures inside showed less skin than U.S. issues 50 years ago, copies were being passed from desk to desk in Jakarta offices. Look, folks, well, that Playboy magazine that's being passed around in Jakarta, believe me, does not at all resemble Playboy magazine you'd see here in the United States. I'm sure that females are scantily clad and in a very, I don't know, how should I say this, looking very sexual, okay? But that's about it. However, a little tagline on this particular story. And here we go again about, you know, stupidity. A leader of one militant Islamic group threatened to use force, if necessary, to get the magazine withdrawn. Here we go again, folks. Now, if you can't make a moral law, we're going to blow you up. Very, very dumb. All you do is piss people off. Will we ever learn? I doubt it. Now, this is also in Jakarta, and interestingly, it seems to occur within a day or two of the report I just read. Quote, unrelated people who kiss each other on the lips for more than 5 minutes at public places will face arrest. End quote. Well, you know what? I can't imagine kissing someone for 5 minutes. I think my lips would go numb. How would anybody do that? It's kind of weird. 5 minutes? That's a long kiss. The other thing that's a little bit strange about this story, why is it okay for people to kiss longer than 5 minutes if they're related? I don't understand. What are we talking about here? This is kind of strange to me. Should kissing in public be outlawed? Of course not. Another moral issue. Tell me, who is being hurt by one person kissing another person? Is it somehow interfering with your constitutional rights, such as the Bill of Rights? You don't like to look at it? Turn your head the other way. Very simple, huh? But no, people that pass these kinds of laws and get involved in these kinds of issues of morality, they don't want to turn their head the other way. What they want is the whole world to be and think just like them. Turn your head the other way. Real simple. From the New York Times, this is big in today's news. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on it, but it is big. Cheney's aide says president approved leak. Well, you know, the title of that should scare the hell out of you. I'll read it. I got this. Quote, Vice President Dick Cheney's former chief of staff testified that he was authorized by President Bush through Mr. Cheney in July of 2003 to disclose key parts of what until then was a classified pre-war intelligence estimate on Iraq. The testimony by the former official, Louis Libby Jr., cited in a court filing by the government made late Wednesday, provides an indication that Mr. Bush, who has long criticized leaks of secret information as a threat to national security, may have played a direct role in authorizing disclosure of the intelligence report on Iraq. Why would he do it? I have no idea. Mr. Bush is a very strange person. He is really getting weird, folks. Very, very strange. He likes breaking the law. We know that much. And now to the blogs. excellent story here. This is from the blog called Loaded Mouth. Pay attention. It's about feminism and the need for feminists. Matter of fact, that's the name of the article. Now, this article is written by a male. And you need to understand, folks, that women in our world are second-class citizens. That's how we treat them. Let me read the blog. Quote, I spent a lot of time lately lurking my favorite sites. I am reading, but not always commenting. I don't know why. For the last couple of weeks, it seems like the fierce why-do-we-need-feminist debate has heated up. I'll give you a reason why. I have a cousin who just got in trouble with the law. Now, she was arrested for possession of marijuana and booked into an Indiana county jail. Again, here we go, folks. We're criminalizing the use of marijuana. How stupid. I better not get on that rant again. Let me finish. She was arrested on a Saturday, and in the booking process, the county takes all your possessions. You understand that, folks. You're going to jail. They're not going to let you take your purse or your wallet with you. Well, it just so happened that her period started that night, and it surprised her. Now, she didn't have a tampon or a menstrual pad because her purse was taken during the booking process. Here comes the hard part. She asked for a pad and was informed that the jail doesn't provide that stuff. Inmates need to purchase personal items on Friday, so they can't help her. Now, some of you might say, hey, she deserves to make a mess. She did the crime, now do the time. And I say, F you. What bullshit is it to not provide a woman dealing with a natural monthly bodily function with such a simple thing as a tampon? It is cruel and inhuman treatment. Now, I don't know how she dealt with the situation. I hope some inmate was kind and helped her out, but for all I know, she might have had to ball up toilet paper. Yeah, they gave her that. Or maybe she just sat on the toilet. Which brings up a concept. If there's no toilet paper, will the jail people say to you, we don't provide that? If they provide toilet paper, why wouldn't they provide a tampon? Natural bodily function. I don't get it. Now, as a guy, I don't think about menstruation or much of anything that women deal with. So we need women out there fighting for their rights. The day we don't need feminists is the day dumb shit like not getting a tampon in jail doesn't happen anymore in our civilized world. Who knows? It could be sooner rather than later. It isn't like women prisoners are being handcuffed during labor or anything. You know, folks, it's time to grow up a little bit. Why we wouldn't provide something that natural is beyond me. And this is from the blog Why Now. Some of these blog names are not real popular. I like going through the blogs and then clicking my way through the links. I find a blog, I click on some of their links to other blogs, and then I click on links to other blogs, and I wind up in some of the strangest places. But anyway, this is from the Why Now blog, and the title is Bush Ordered Intelligence Leak. The Libby revelation should put an end to people claiming that the shrubbery is concerned with national security when it comes to leaks, and make plain that politically based leaks are a problem that originated with this White House. These people use classification to silence their critics and declassification to attack them. They could not care less about national security, corruption, cronyism, and incompetence. The guiding principles of the shrubbery. The shrubbery, folks, is the White House. Well, why did I read that again since I just covered it? Mainly because I think the person put it right to the heart on how the White House uses classification to silence critics and declassification to attack them. Folks, our government is totally, totally corrupt. I can't believe we're still... I do not believe that we do not have an actual dyed-in-the-wool revolution going on. I don't know why not. Man, are we a bunch of pacifists? Well, we really like being punished. Maybe that's what it is. We really like the punishment. The next one is Proof Through the Night. That's the name of the blog. Isn't that a neat name? This one is a little bit off the wall, and you're not going to know a whole lot about it, but some of it is kind of funny. It has to do with a scientist named Bill Nye. Audience members who expected to see Bill Nye, the science guy, conduct experiments and wow their children received quite a surprise Wednesday when Nye spoke at McLennan Community College. Nye instead addressed such topics as Mars exploration, global warming, and energy consumption, particularly oil and gas. He even ruffled a few religious feathers along the way. The Emmy-winning scientist angered a few audience members when he criticized literal interpretation of the biblical verse Genesis 1:16, which reads, quote, God made two great lights, the greater light to govern the day and the lesser light to govern the night. He also made the stars. Nye pointed out that the sun, the greater light, is but one of countless stars and that the lesser light is the moon, which really is not a light at all, rather a reflector of light. Well, that really bothered a lot of people. A number of audience members left the room at that point, visibly angered by what some perceived as irreverence. Oh, my God, here we go with that word again, irreverence. I'm about as irreverent as you can get. The only one who beats me at that is my wife, Jill. Quote, we believe in a God, exclaimed one woman as she left the room with three young children. End quote. Well, the blogger asked a question. Here's my question. Why were these people there in the first place? I would have thought that the word science would have kept them away in droves. Well, no. And how do I feel about the question? I think it's kind of dumb. And I'll tell you why. There is absolutely nothing about science that would stop religious people, you know, Sunday go to church, Christians, whatever, from becoming involved in science. And in fact, when I worked at two universities, many of my colleagues in the science, and some of them in very hard sciences, were in fact very religious, devout people. You know, you got to wonder, how do people compartmentalize that? I do not know. But they do it. Now, the next one, the next blog, I'm going to really torture the name of it, but I'm going to try it. By the way, the word I'm about to pronounce is an ancient goddess, okay? Echidne of the Snakes. I hope I got that out right. This is called bad popularization of gender research. And I have a little news for you now that you hear me talking about feminist tonight and gender and so on and so forth. We are going to start a series of broadcasts in which we talk about special women issues. And I'm hoping to get that series started pretty quickly. I will have a guest on who will kind of keep us up to date as to what's going on with women issues. What things will we cover? It'll be safe houses, sexual and physical abuse, so on and so forth. Okay, quote, this could become a continuing series. There is so much bad popularization of research that I sometimes weep into my keyboard. Like after reading about the recent research into what men and women like to read. Now, there's a very long article called The Guardian that apparently did some research on what novels men read and what novels women read. So let's go to part of The Guardian itself. Quote, the novel that means most to men is about indifference, alienation, and lack of emotional responses. That which means most to women is about deeply held feelings, a struggle to overcome circumstances and passion. Now, this was research by the University of London. Professor Lisa Jardine and Annie Watkins of Queen Mary College interviewed 500 men, many of whom had professional connection with literature, about the novels that had changed their lives. The most frequently named book was Albert Camus's The Outsider, And I got to tell you, folks, I can understand why men would read it. I really do. That was followed by J.D. Salinger's Catcher in the Rye. Well, come on. Everybody who has been either in the 12th grade in high school or first year in college was required to read Catcher in the Rye. How could you not? And Kurt Vonnegut's Slaughterhouse-Five. It was not only a good book, it was a great novel, or excuse me, a great movie. The project called Men's Milestone Fiction, commissioned by the Orange Prize for Fiction and the Guardian, followed on from similar research into women's favorite novels undertaken by the same team last year. Now, the results are strikingly different, with almost no overlap between men's and women's tastes. On the whole, men preferred books by dead... Hold on, I got it. This is almost funny. Men preferred books by dead white men, only one book by a woman. Harper Lee appears in the list of the top 20 novels with which men most identified. I'm sorry, folks, I do not know who Harper Lee is. Women, by contrast, most frequently cited works by Charlotte and Emily Bronte, Margaret Atwood, George Eliot, and, of course, everybody knows, Jane Austen. You know what? The work by Jane Austen, that's got to be common almost around the planet for women. They also named a much richer and more diverse set of novels than men. There was a much broader mix between contemporary and classic works. Okay, back to the author of the blog. Only I guess. So I looked for the comparable study on women's choices of novels that changed their lives. The only link I found was a study which didn't ask about life-changing choices at all, but about something slightly different. Now we'll go back to the study. Quote, "It is a truth universally acknowledged that the book women feel that has most transformed their lives is the one that has assured them for the past two centuries that, yes, they will marry the wealthy, handsome man next door and live happily ever after." Wow. Is that what women prefer to read? Pride and Prejudice, Jane Austen's salty-tongued commentary on the plight of women in the 19th century, perhaps best known today for providing Colin Firth with the opportunity to pose in a wet in a wet shirt in front of many grateful viewers, has won the Woman's Watershed Fiction Poll. Despite being specifically about women's lives 200 years ago, the relevance of Austen's classic has not diminished. Back to the blogger. Note that neither of these studies is based on proper randomly drawn samples of men and women. Folks, that statement is bullshit. There is no way to determine from what this person read or what I read how the study was conducted. This person had the word random in their head. They knew it was important in terms of research, and they tossed in that sentence. Why? Because of the outcome of the research. Onward. Note that the woman's study is based on 14,000 people who felt strongly enough to send their answers in, and the men's study is based on 500 people, many of whom have a professional connection to books. To compare the two studies is to compare one gigantic and eager apple to a very small and rather professional orange. Makes no sense at all. Not true. If in fact the study was random, if it was random, then it wouldn't. The size of the N would not matter. Oh, and you know, let's talk about size of N. If you want to demonstrate that something works, let's suppose you're a pharmaceutical company and you got this pill that you spent $80 gazillion on developing, and you're testing it now in the research labs. But every time you do the study, it comes out that it's really not quite all that effective. What do you do? Simple. There's such a thing called correlation. The higher the N, the number of people in the study, the more significance to a low-end correlation. You would expect someone to say, oh, this had a very high correlation, and what number is that, folks? You expect to hear something like 0.80. Well, you can get a correlation of 0.35. and still be significant if the N is large enough. That's how simple it is to manipulate statistics. Okay, back to the blog. Then add the suspicion I have that the two studies ask different questions. Not quite. How do I feel about the article? Well, I'm convinced men and women really read totally different books. Of course they do. Come on, I mean, let's get a grip here. For instance, young man, 25, 26 years old, he's not married, he's in college. What kind of magazine does he have under his arm? I guarantee you it's not Red Book. You might get red in the face if you saw the cover of it, but it is not Red Book. Men and women are different, folks. Why do we keep trying to think that they're not? Men and women are different. See how simple that is to say? Just say it. Men and women are different. Now the next sentence. Let's learn to adjust to those differences by focusing on what is common between them. Yeah. Men and women are different. We don't have to dwell on it. Do men and women read different books? Absolutely. Is it a physical kind of thing? In other words, the kind of books that we read, is it being determined by our nature, how we're built physically? How stupid that would be. Absolutely not. It's a cultural ramification. How women are raised is compared to how men are raised. Real simple. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure that one out. And I am out. I'm sorry. I'm out of time. Good night and Godspeed.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.